From Toronto, Canada, home of igloos, polar bears, and flying hockey pucks, this is Inside Movies and TV.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Hello there, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Inside Movies and TV. This is show number 58 for May the 3rd, 2009. The summer silly season has begun, and it was a good weekend, which we'll get to a little bit later. My name is Aaron Shaw. Of course, with me is Jamie Hosking, and to his immediate other direction, what way is that, left? It's Dennis.
Hey there, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you doing?
Not bad.
Things are good.
Are you enjoying the beautiful weather?
I'm laughing because Dennis and I are sharing a microphone and it's turning into a comic piece. If we only had a webcam on here, we'll have to expand our podcasting gear and get us lots of guest microphones. But like you mentioned,
it's who's on first.
Yeah, it's a first weekend in May, the first big movie weekend, although some people could argue that Fast and Furious was kind of an early start to the whole movie season. But it looks like this has been the official kickoff to the movie season, and it opened pretty big with Wolverine. It continued this year's box office boom, and it kept a core franchise alive for 20th Century Fox and, to I guess, a lesser extent, Marvel Entertainment. And I want to talk about that at the end of the story. The fourth in a series, of course. It began in the year 2000 with the first X-Men movie directed by Bryan Singer. This new movie, Wolverine, stopped short of the performance of Iron Man last year, which took in about $98.6 million when it was released by Paramount Pictures and Marvel on the same weekend last year. The Hugh Jackman movie brought in a strong $21,225 per theater average in 4,099 movie theaters, despite generating mixed reviews. The film fell $15 million short of 2006's X-Men The Last Stand, but it's still an enormous success for Hugh Jackman and the movie's director, Gavin Hood. But the Fox film, which became an instant hit in the face of obstacles this weekend, including boycott calls, some of them triggered by Fox's earlier threat to block Warner Brothers from releasing Watchmen there a few months ago. And a still unsolved leak that has put a pirated version of the movie on the internet a month before. It's funny how they haven't quite discovered who did that just yet. The performance was particularly impressive in that it opened without the advantage of a supersized IMAX screening. A demand for the big screen technology has exceeded supply, and that has boosted the opening weekend of fantasy thrillers like last year's The Dark Knight, and probably next week with the new version of Star Trek. Fox studio executives have been concerned about the online leak, and it's been agonizing as they waited to see what the box office numbers were when they came in. Even as late as Saturday night, a heavily viewed NBA playoff game bit into the audiences in Chicago and Boston, and the critics did not help. One of the many to pan the film, A.O. Scott wrote in the New York Times, and he cited it as evidence that the superhero movie is suffering from serious imaginative fatigue. But an unexpectedly large female audience, nearly 50% of the total, and a possible return of fans who were distracted by the basketball game boosted 20th Century Fox's expectations of the film's continued strength. Returns from 101 foreign territories reached about $73 million to give the film a global box office of about $160 million. Ghost of Girlfriends Past, a romantic comedy with Matthew McConaughey and Jennifer Garner, took in about $15.3 million to place number two for Warner Brothers and New Line Cinema's division, according to a studio estimate. Last week's number one film, Obsessed, a thriller from Sony Pictures and Screen Gems, placed third this week with about $12.2 million in sales and a total of $47 million since opening on April 24th. And that movie dropped to over 50% from last week. No big surprise there. The other new wide release for the weekend, this is probably going to be news to most people, was this 3D animated sci-fi film, Battle for Terra. We talked about it during our summer movie preview. It opened on 1,162 screens. The movie featured Justin Long and Evan Rachel Woods as some of the voices, but it was little competition for the other 3D movie in the marketplace, DreamWorks animation juggernaut Monsters vs. Aliens. I mean, that movie grossed another $5.8 million in its sixth weekend, and that was in the fifth slot in the rankings.
That movie, five. It hasn't left the top five since it came out.
Battle for Terror couldn't even muster up more than $1 million for a 12th place finish in the box office.
Well, it's only on 1,100 theaters.
Yeah, I know. What are you going to do? There's just not enough room. And there are still movies from weeks past, like the aforementioned Fast and Furious, that are still taking up some screen real estate. Other pictures in the top five were 17 again from Warner Brothers and New Line, with about $6.5 million in ticket sales and $48.5 million since opening on April 17th. And the aforementioned Monsters vs. Aliens. In all, the weekend's top 12 films took in about $152.2 million, about 1% up from the $150.7 million last year when Iron Man opened, which eventually took in over $318 million to become last year's second biggest movie after The Dark Knight. Anyway, exceptionally strong performance according to the Hollywood.com box office tracking service. For the year-to-date, the total box office is about $3.2 billion, and that's up 16.4%. from about $2.8 billion last year. The ongoing surge in ticket sales appears to show an audience drawn to diversion, basically, in tough economic times, and the growing power of the ultra-large screen and 3D technologies that pull viewers to see movies like Monsters vs. Aliens. And they'll support a number of upcoming box office pictures, including Avatar, which is expected from Fox and James Cameron later this year. So that's what's happening in the box office this week. Aaron, both you and I saw Wolverine. I think we both had a good time. It was enjoyable. It probably upset a few hardcore Wolverine fans, but it was, I think, just the kind of movie that general audiences will like. Lots of action, you know, some decent acting from Hugh Jackman and Liev Schreiber, I thought. What were your thoughts?
I liked the movie.
That's it.
No, I mean, it's... A couple of things have come to mind with the whole weekend with the numbers and everything, and both bad and good. The good is that, and it's kind of bad at the same time. The studios, Fox was projecting around 80 to 90 million for the movie's debut for this weekend. But then the leak came out, and they're like, "Oh, that's going to affect the box office." And then the recent epidemic, whatever the swine flu was shut down a couple of markets that Wolverine was going to open up in, mainly Mexico, which we have something for a little bit later. So it's good that the movie, still despite everything that's happened, has maintained what it was projected to do. It's bad because it's kind of unofficially, or maybe unintentionally, promotes piracy, movie piracy, because more and more movies could suddenly be leaked, and they're going to get big buzz, and blah blah this and blah blah that, and those were just a couple of the thoughts that came to my mind with regards to this movie. Also, because it's such a tight May, I think the movie it's gonna struggle for the next couple of weeks. Now it's not gonna have two consecutive big weeks in a row. Next week is more than likely it's gonna be Star Trek, and that's gonna drop Wolverine's numbers. Then there's Angels and Demons, and the following week is Terminator Salvation, and the following week is Up, and so it's gonna have a hard time. And Night at the Museum too. And you laugh, but that's gonna get people there. People are gonna see that. I'm probably gonna see Night at the Museum too. As well, I like the first one, but
one of the few family films.
So I'm just thinking, it's going to have it's 87 million is a good start. It will probably make the $130-140 million budget, but I don't know if it. I think it might make 200 million. You never know. But I'm saying that because A, the competition, like I said, is stiff, and B, it's the fourth time we've seen Wolverine, right? So, I mean, it was a great story, and it messes with anything that's been written on the page, but what movie doesn't when it comes to comic book adaptations? Even the comic books can contradict the comic books. So when people complain, oh, it's not like what's in the book, I'm like, well, what's the book you're talking about isn't what was in the book that was written before it. So anyways, it's just going to be because he is kind of tired. I don't have a desire to go and run out and see it again. I can wait till it's on DVD or maybe, you know, sometime in July. Anyways, you look like you have something on your mind, Dennis, and I'm just babbling on. No. Go ahead.
Well, I went to see The Soloist on Saturday night, and it was okay. It wasn't that great a film, but I already feel that I'm behind the times because I haven't seen Wolverine yet. And, you know, when Star Trek opens next week, well, do I go see both of them in the same weekend? I don't know. But I think you get sort of caught up in the Aaron's showing off his Star Trek T-shirt here. It's interesting, the Beach Cinema in Toronto where I saw The Soloist and Aaron and Jamie saw Wolverine has a setup with all kinds of paraphernalia, Wolverine comic books and even Watchmen action figures, Terminator, Salvation action figures already. The retailers are getting behind this boom in the summer movies. Anyway, all that to say, I'm looking forward to seeing Wolverine. And despite, you know, some of the less than stellar reviews.
One thing I wanted to mention real quick before we moved on was that, Aaron, you're absolutely right. I think it's pretty logical to assume that box office for Wolverine is going to drop off dramatically once Star Trek opens. I'm predicting probably a $100 million, maybe even a $120 million opening weekend for Star Trek.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be the movie to beat this summer. That one and perhaps Transformers 2, simply because the new trailer is outstanding.
I know. I want to, and I've been kind of, you know, iffy. I loved Transformers, and I was planning on seeing Revenge of the Fallen, right? Revenge of the Fallen.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Not Rise of the Cobra. Anyway, but they launched a new trailer, and I liked it more than before, than the previous trailer, because the previous trailer, the one that we used in our preview show, was just, oh no, we didn't even use it. And
no.
I used the bit. Anyways, the first trailer was just kind of explosions and scenes.
Yeah.
This one,
intercut.
For
action.
Me, I need to see some kind of plot in trailers to get me interested into a movie.
Yeah, and one other thing it did, shockingly enough, it sounds like Michael Bay actually listened to criticism. And lots of wide shots, lots of open spaces where you see these robots in action. Where the first movie was nice and tight. I don't want to get into a big Transformers breakdown, but some of the criticisms when it came to the visuals of the movie was that you didn't see what was going on from a bigger perspective. There was lots of close-ups, and you didn't know exactly what the heck you were looking at. So this one looked like it was going to be a big deal. But yeah, this is the thing with May. May is just jam-packed with a blockbuster or two. Every single weekend.
Night at the Museum and Terminator Salvation
and
the same weekend.
Sure, we've got, you know, 4,100 theaters North America.
But why 4,099?
Because, well, you know what? Well, I guess they couldn't come up with that one more. But, you know, that was smart. Get the money. And, you know, it used to be 3 weeks. Now it seems to be this month, a week. If you don't make your money now and then the subsequent weeks, like, for example, Dennis, if you want to see Wolverine, maybe you can go during the week. But it'll be forgotten for the most part.
Right.
I think it might drop right off. You're already seeing it, Aaron. You brought me a copy of today's paper with a gigantic Star Trek article in it from the weekend. So that, you know, people are already kind of, all right, Wolverine made its money. Let's move on.
Moving on, yeah, exactly.
Moving on.
That's why a couple of weeks ago we were talking about shows jockeying for dates and release dates and how, you know, a release date is important and it's about, you know, getting your money right off the bat. And if Fast and Furious set an example for a movie coming out in April that can do almost as much as what Wolverine did in May, you know, we can start seeing movies spread out to spring summer season, you know.
Yeah, and we're seeing, you know,
because it's just getting too crowded.
Yeah,
and you know what, this important, this summer is the summer that's been affected by the writer's strike for in terms of movies. Once we get through May, you know, it's a light June and it's kind of a middling July. There's not much else once we get to June.
It may have been smart for one or two of these films to reschedule to June.
Well, that's why they did it. Oh, for what? For sorry.
From May. Wolverine might have been smart to move to June, or, I mean, maybe May was fine. And it shows confidence, I guess, with Paramount and Star Trek and with who the hell's releasing Terminator?
Warner Brothers.
So with, you know, you're seeing the three big studios, or three of the big studios, you know, Sony's absent here. But Yeah, May is kind of light. Or sorry, June's kind of light for action movies. So it would have been nice to see some of that shift around a little bit. But all right, you'll get all my money early. That's basically the bottom line.
As a result of swine flu, movie theaters in Mexico have shut down to contain the spread of it. Therefore, Hollywood has delayed plans to kick off their summer season. In the country, Mexico is regularly among the top 12 foreign markets for the U.S. Actors who had plans to promote films in the country, such as Hugh Jackman and Miley Cyrus, are also staying away for now. That has left some fans stuck at home as public life in the country has slowed, relying on movie rentals and TV for entertainment. 20th Century Fox, as I already said, when we were talking about Wolverine, they for now have delayed the release of Wolverine, which was supposed to premiere this Friday. They've said it tentatively to come out on May 14th, which would put it alongside, give it a day up on Angels and Demons in Mexico. Although the film opens in the rest of the world, opened this past weekend and through the rest of the world, Fox said it expected theaters in Mexico, most of which closed last week, to reopen on May 10th, but they're watching the situation closely. Hugh Jackman is scheduled to go to Mexico on May 12th to the 13th to make up for an appearance he canceled this week. Hannah Montana, Miley Cyrus.
That's how much we care about her.
Of Hannah Montana. She also recently canceled her appearance in, Puebla, which is 65 miles northeast of Mexico's capital. Sony's moved the release of Terminator Salvation to July 31st from June 5th. And Angels and Demons to June 12th. Okay, so I was wrong. Wolverine's got it's got that weekend to itself. No, it doesn't. Star Trek is set to go worldwide on May 8th. So they're keeping it on May 8th. But Viacom said its opening weekend in Mexico has been delayed indefinitely. Time Warner has pushed the romantic comedy Ghost Girlfriends Past to June 12th. It was supposed to be released this past Friday alongside Wolverine. One of the big challenges for the studio in reshuffling the release dates is avoiding having their summer blockbusters go head-to-head on the same weekend. If this crisis continues, Warner's might also delay yet again the release of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, which is slated to go on July 15th. And President of International Distribution for Warner Brothers said, "This is obviously a very fluid situation. Dates could continue to change based on current events as well as how competitive dates line up." And again, it just goes for jockeying for position. You know, Wolverine lost out this weekend in the international market. Mexico was the third highest market I remember reading for X-Men: The Last Stand. And so needless to say, Mexico does bring a lot of business internationally to the North American box office, to movie releases.
Yeah, I'm presuming their box office takes are included in North American box office. It's really unfortunate that this had to happen, especially in Mexico. Obviously, nobody would want to wish a pandemic like this on any country. And it's a horrible time right now to be doing this while we're in the midst of a global economic slump. But of all the things that have happened, something that will prevent people from going out to places where there's going to be a lot of people in one room,
yep,
in a confined space, it's really unfortunate. The Mexican economy may be affected a little bit by this. It's the kind of thing where, you know, we're seeing box office up this year over 16% because people are wanting the diversion, wanting the distraction, wanting to be entertained. And I'm sure the Mexican people are no different. So, they're getting their movies shuffled around a little bit. They will get them. In fact, their schedule looks like it makes a little more sense than the one that we have, where they're getting these titles
a little more in June,
spread out a little bit more, you know. Mind you, of course, you know, I don't think that, you know, these celebrities, of course, are canceling on the advice of their advisors and their staff and that sort of thing. But even if they went to Mexico, they're going down by private jet. They're going straight to their hotel. They're going to the venue. They're going home. Many of the times, these actors and celebrities don't even bother sticking around for their own movies. So, and when it comes to their personal risk, I think it's pretty low. But that said, if their movie's not opening, there's no point in them going down. We've got another very serious story. This is one that, of course, we've been following for a number of weeks. I won't even guess how many. The Screen Actors Guild is mailing out ballots May 19th for their vote on their feature film and primetime contracts. These ratification ballots are going to members with a return date of June 9th, and that means nearly a year will have passed between the time the ballots will be tallied and the June 30th, 2008 expiration of the previous contract. The Screen Actors Guild originally said it would send out ballots in early May, but the Guild needed more time to prepare the pro and con statements going on to each of the ballots to its 120,000 members. This year, the contract impasse has been marked by explosive internal battles over the pact between hardline membership-first factions and a moderate coalition that gained a narrow majority on the national board in the fall, including January's firing of National Executive Director Doug Allen for allegedly botching negotiations. The two sides are jockeying for potential leverage in the next round of Screen Actors Guild elections in September, with membership first bitterly opposing the deal. SAG's national board approved the two-year deal on April 19th with a 53% endorsement. Not a ringing endorsement by any stretch, but an endorsement nonetheless.
Yeah.
Backers touted the pact for keeping SAG in sync with the Directors Guild of America, the Writers Guild of America, and the AFTRA Union, the expirations in 2011, and bringing about much needed stability, plus pay raises to actors, along with blasting membership first for being unrealistic in its aggressive approach to negotiations. For its part, membership first, those folks there say that they staged a demonstration Wednesday in Pasadena to protest the hiring of an outside PR firm, Sailor Company, to persuade members to approve the contract agreement. About 60 people attended the event, including Tony Danza and former SAG president Ed Asner. Opponents to the deal have been asserted that the growth of new media precludes accepting the same template as the WGA, the DGA, and AFTRA. They've contended that voting the deal down would force the conglomerates to offer a SAG better terms, though the conglomerates have insisted for the past year that they will not sweeten the deal. So that's what's going
that's
on.
That's what's going on.
Yeah.
It's pretty much a lot of the same. I mean, it's the end of one thing. It's the start of another thing. There's going to be more internal fighting, I'm sure of it. Like they said, there's a whole new round of nominations going out in the fall. And I'm just happy that even though it's taken 52 weeks, that's how long we've been following it, 52 weeks to get this resolved. And it's not really even 52 weeks. Like, they did 3-4 months where they just didn't do squat.
Well, Robert Downey Jr. has left the Los Angeles Times newsroom, the latest location of The Soloist, his performance there, to begin shooting 3 weeks ago, Iron Man 2. It's the sequel to last summer's blockbuster Marvel superhero movie. And it opens May 7th in 2010, next year. Takes place 6 months after Stark revealed his identity as Iron Man, says director Jon Favreau. And the development is playing out with unexpected results, Favreau says. How many superheroes are open about their true identities? We wanted to play with that idea, but it obviously has consequences in his relationships and on the team. There are a lot of areas we can explore, he said. Favreau hopes to have all other Iron Man 2 details locked down, even though he's sending dispatches via Twitter from the set. He says it's never easy with summer movies, but we're trying to keep as much a surprise as possible. That means no new dirt on replacing Terrence Howard with Don Cheadle, or how the crime-fighting team S.H.I.E.L.D. will ultimately come together, or how he'll work in new characters. Among those signed on for this go-round are, fresh from your local arena, Mickey Rourke as Whiplash, Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow, and Sam Rockwell as Justin Hammer. Favreau says that tackling the franchise a second time is easier because he knows the landscape. Something else would help too, he says. I really enjoyed when we were a dark horse and no one knew much about us. I hope we can find that place again.
I don't know about making a sequel being easier. It's more like you got to top what you did. I'd think it'd be harder. But, you know, they've had a little bit of trouble. It took forever for them to sign Mickey Rourke.
Yeah, and there was a lot of controversy about contract with Samuel L. Jackson, who, you know, if you didn't stay until the end of the movie, didn't even know he was in it.
Right.
Playing Nick Cage, the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. And
isn't it Nick Fury?
Or sorry, Nick Fury.
Nick
My apologies. Because the reason I said Nick Cage is because we're talking about a Nick Cage movie now, too. Believe it or not, with Terrence Howard. Anyway, as the villain, not as Nick Cage. But there was talk for the longest time. I think we even mentioned it here that Sam Jackson was not going to be on board as Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. But now he's signing on, I think, for up to 9 different movies.
Yeah, something like that.
Culminating with an Avengers movie.
Yeah.
So yeah,
Captain America and Thor. And
yeah, so the most prolific actor in Hollywood history is now going to be even more prolific. But I think if he sticks with what they did best with the last movie, and it seems like that's what they're doing, if you've seen the photograph online that's been released of about Robert Downey as Tony Stark in Iron Man 2, more of the same, you know, enhance the good, downplay the bad, you know, more Iron Man in the suit, you know, and you know, stick with what worked, and I think that's what they're going to do. The one thing that concerns me is the cast. Not that they're not good; they're fantastic. There's just a lot of them because you have to.
That's pretty ensemble.
Yeah, you have to assume that Gwyneth Paltrow's back.
Yeah, she is.
Jeff Bridges is gone, but he's going to be in Tron too, so he's busy anyway. So you've got other villains and other people going on. And I'm looking forward to it. When he says he really enjoyed it when they were the Dark Horse, there wasn't really a lot of attention paid to Iron Man. Nobody knew who it was, really, for the most part. Everybody was looking at The Dark Knight and the new Batman movie, and nobody really had huge expectations for Iron Man. It kind of took everybody by surprise. So definitely the expectations are a lot higher for this one.
Fox has announced plans that it has finally greenlit the sequel to 1987's Wall Street, which was starred Michael Douglas and Martin Sheen, right? Or Charlie Sheen? Charlie Sheen, one of the Sheens. Starred Michael Douglas and Charlie Sheen, and was directed by Oliver Stone. The sequel has been long delayed, but Fox finally said they're going to go forth with it. Oliver Stone is back aboard as the director. Michael Douglas will reprise his role as Gordon Gekko. And the studio is in negotiations with none other than Shia LaBeouf to play a young Wall Street trader under the guidance of Gekko. It's supposed to be a somewhat updated version of the character Charlie Sheen played in the original film. The sequel's original writer was Stephen Skiff. He's now moved on to other projects. But Alan Loeb, who wrote Things We Lost in the Fire, did rewrites on the script. Fox hopes that the film will be in production as early as this summer. It's simply going under the title of Wall Street 2, having shed its original title, which was going to be called Money Never Sleeps. No one is offering a lot of specifics about the storyline, except to say that the focus remains on the Gekko character, whose exploits will closely reflect much of the greed and chicanery. Seen in the past year on Wall Street. I don't think I've seen Wall Street, but I might have. Or I'm confusing with Dog Day Afternoon.
One of the best lines in the movie is in a speech that Michael Douglas gives, and it says, greed is good. And that should have been the subtitle instead of Money Never Sleeps. But it's funny because he's Gekko is, as you know, a lizard. And Gordon Gekko is supposed to be this oily, evil chap. And it's funny because when the movie came out, a lot of people thought the greed is good speech was right on, and thought that Gekko was a character to be, emulated, and that people should fashion their ethics around Gekko, which I guess surprised everybody involved with the film. But it's about time that they made a sequel to it. Given the mess that the economy is in, and if Oliver Stone and his team can shed some light on it, and maybe the Gekko character gets his just desserts, that would be terrific.
Well, I know for certain that Wall Street has certainly inspired a lot of Wall Street and Bay Street types. I mean, Wall Street the movie, and it was kind of the first in a series of of financial thrillers, I guess you can call them. Glengarry Glen Ross, of course, was originally the Mammoth play, became the Mammoth movie. But movies like that and Boiler Room, you know, had these iconic characters, these guys who glorify greed. You know, greed is good. Boiler Room is the other one, you know, to a lesser extent. But I think the theme is ultimately this type of mindset is to be a person's downfall. And I think they'll probably, if they're smart, stick with that same theme, especially if you look at today's current economic climate. It'll be interesting to see what kind of angle they take.
Michael Douglas won an Oscar for this role, right?
It is entirely possible he did, yes.
Pretty sure
he did. Yeah, a fantastic performance, you know. Really oily, you know, he had his hair slicked back, and he was just an absolute weasel. But, you know, people thought, you know, it was, whatever means to reach the end kind of thing. It's a little disappointing that apparently they're going back to this well a little bit, you know. I don't know. Oliver Stone really hasn't been one to do sequels in the past. You know, he's been pretty good with original material and coming up with some great original characters. But out of all the films he's done, this one in particular probably is best suited for a follow-up.
Well, you can't do JFK 2.
I know. That would be funny.
It'll be interesting to see the results given that Barack Obama is in the White House and see, Wall Street 2 at a time when the United States ethic is more towards empowering people and trying to get the bad guys, and how Gecko survives in that atmosphere.
Go ahead.
Well, no, it'll be interesting to see how they begin, where they start. Is the character going to be, the Gecko character going to be successful? Is he going to be in prison? Is he going to be somewhere in rural Alabama somewhere? You know, it'll be interesting to see what they do with it, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, now I'm convinced. I don't think I've seen Wall Street yet.
No, I don't think you have.
I don't think I have. Anyways, I was going to say on kind of Dennis's point there about how the current administration and the world of today is trying to look on the brighter side. Might not be such a good time for a corporate corruption scandal or big business scandal. Although State of Play was really, really well done. But this is a time during recessions where people like to look on the bright side of things, right? And a sequel to a movie that wasn't really that positive from what I'm gathering is a bit of a gamble.
It is.
Oliver Stone. Let's go W2.
Yeah, it may be a subject that many people find too close to home.
And especially if they're going to the movies to escape their problems and to, maybe then if Gordon Gekko gets his just rewards, then everybody will cheer. But if they're going to see him survive and do another Greed is Good speech, then it won't, it won't hit the right buttons for them.
So the next story we have is a bit of an unusual one. It's not one that I thought I would ever hear. Director David Cronenberg, who's been responsible for some great films of late, including A History of Violence and Eastern Promises. Those are more of his mainstream movies, but he's originally known for some pretty trippy horror movies in the 80s. Movies such as Scanners, The Brood, and Videodrome, which went into even crazier, more disturbing subject matter involving technology and interactivity with the human body, and et cetera, et cetera. James Wood starred as the head of a sleazy cable channel, always on the lookout for sexy and violent material, and his interest in a satellite feed of torture called Videodrome leads him into an experience where reality and fantasy collide. If you've ever seen images of James Woods holding a flesh gun or with a huge gaping hole in his abdomen, then that was Videodrome. I remember renting it as a kid and probably not really, you know, the kind of material that I should be watching when I was young boy. Yeah, back then when it wasn't that big of a deal to rent stuff like that, yeah. Anyway, now Universal wants to take what was an essentially small story of a man going insane and blow it up into a large-scale sci-fi action thriller and infuse it with, quote-unquote, the possibilities of nanotechnology.
Cool.
Now, Cronenberg isn't involved in the project yet, which is being written by Aaron Kruger, whose filmography includes The Ring, The Ring 2, Scream 3, Reindeer Games, and an upcoming TNT miniseries adaptation of Stephen King and Peter Straub's The Talisman. So if Cronenberg does indeed step in to direct this new version of Videodrome, the project might have some hope. But as it stands now, this remake sounds like it's steering too far from the original unique vision. That said, lots of times things get remade and directed and produced without the input of the original director or writer. Happens all the time. James Cameron in Terminator 3. So we talked about this a bit during the break. This is a movie that was almost too cutting edge. And he did another one some years later, just a month or two before The Matrix came out, called Existence with Jennifer Jason Leigh. Really another trippy movie along the similar lines that didn't really do much, didn't draw audiences, and almost affected the box office of The Matrix, except word of mouth spread so much about it that they realized The Matrix wasn't just another virtual reality movie. So the idea that Videodrome is getting remade, I don't know. It's a tough one. Because
I say direct to DVD.
Maybe. You know what? You're probably right. Aaron's probably right. We see this all the time. We see it especially right now with these sequels to be.
I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Thrillers.
I still remember what you knew that I did last summer.
Butterfly Effect 2.
Yeah. And I like the Butterfly
Starship
Butterfly.
Troopers 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you name it. There's a direct-to-video sequel out there.
Black Hawk Downs. They made a couple of.
They did?
Know. Yeah. Behind Enemy Lines.
Oh, Behind Enemy Lines 2. Exactly. That's another one I was thinking of. Yeah. So, I don't know. It may happen. I don't see that there's. I think what they're seeing is the nugget or the seed of some potential there. I don't think they'll make it nearly as disturbing or as trippy as the first one was. And thank God for that. If anybody liked Videodrome, feel free to email us at moviesandtvcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear and read why I should go out and rent and watch, because I won't be buying it, rent and watch Videodrome again and relive my childhood nightmares.
Okay, we've got one last story, big story to talk about before we move on to a little discussion in regards to television and blah, blah, blah. But that's after this one. And this week the news was that the Walt Disney Company will buy 30% stake in Hulu.com, which will bring popular TV shows such as Lost and Grey's Anatomy to the video website that was founded by NBC Universal and Fox News Corp. Disney's entrance, which comes after months of negotiations, means that the three of the four major U.S. broadcast networks now have stakes in Hulu. They are NBC, Fox News Corp, and Disney's ABC. The only major broadcast network, thank you, I was looking for that, is CBS. CBS Corp is absent from the Hulu picture at the moment. Hulu officials have declined to provide financial details of the deal with Disney. But a source directly involved in the deal, who did not want to be identified because all sides in the deal decided that the terms would be confidential, put Disney's stakes at 30%, which would be the same as other networks, the same as the other networks. Disney will get three seats on the 12-member board, which is the same number of seats that News Corp has and NBC Universal has. And Hulu has emerged as one of the most popular online video destinations since it launched in 2007. Though it still lags Google's YouTube, some 380 million videos were viewed on Hulu last month. That's up 14.3% from February. According to market research firm ComScore. Hulu is now among the top three online video sites in the United States. In regards to CBS, in a statement, they did not directly address its future plans regarding Hulu. The company said it believes in controlling our own rights for content across media. Other media companies, including Viacom, Inc., provide movies or TV shows to the website, but they're involved in deals that involve advertising, revenue sharing, and not ownership stakes. Disney has previously sought to expand viewership of ABC shows offered on its website and its local affiliates' sites, such as AOL.com and on the Comcast Corp's Fancast website. To grow further, Hulu is studying adding music videos, sports, and news, while it is also looking at expanding services outside the United States.
Well, the Hulu website is something that, I wish I could watch.
It's geo-blocked.
It's geo-blocked like many of these other websites are, which means that outside the U.S., it recognizes your IP address and says, oh, I'm sorry, your content is not licensed for your geographic viewing area. Now, there are ways around it, proxies and emulators and that sort of thing. If you're an internet geek, you probably know what I'm talking about. But these proxies and emulators make video streaming video very slow, and it's just not viable. Now, I have heard folks in the U.S., I know of someone in the U.S. who's completely cut his cable and watches programming directed through a media server on his LCD television from Hulu, and he'll also pick up some stuff from Netflix and other sources. But for the most part, the streaming video from Hulu has been very good. They're watching content from NBC and from Fox. I think this is where the history, or the future, I should say, of television is going. Websites like Hulu. I think the not right away, maybe 20, 30 years, but you're going to see the breakdown of the traditional way of getting content into your home.
Right, just like have an iTunes.
Yeah.
Where you're just downloaded automatically.
Exactly. Just like 50 years ago where most households got their television programming from an antenna outside, and a lot still do, especially in rural areas in North America. But that was the main way you'd get TV programming. Cable TV was really novel in the late 70s and early 80s. It was something that was brand new. It's
all digital, and it's moving. Yeah. You know what? That's something we should talk about when it happens is in June. The States goes digital.
Yeah, and this is something they've been working at quite a bit. I believe Wilmington, North Carolina, was the tryout town, and it went fairly smoothly. They picked one town where they were going to do it early. I think it was Wilmington. And everybody got the message and got their set-top box, but the number one complaint was that they weren't getting as many of the channels as they used to get with their analog antenna, simply because with an analog signal, it fades away gradually. Well, with digital, you either get it or you don't.
Right.
So some of those more distant stations that they were getting, they're not getting anymore. Mind you, the stations they are getting are in digital quality, which is great. So we have one final story for this edition of Inside Movies and TV to wrap things up. And that is the fall TV schedule. What you can expect and what you won't expect.
As of right now, the upfronts are a couple weeks away, NBC does theirs tomorrow.
Yep, the upfronts are basically the presentation of what shows that the networks are going to be announcing for the fall television schedule. If you've been watching TV, you certainly know that it's May. It's the time of year where TV shows, if they haven't wrapped up already, are showing season finales, and in some cases, season finales, whether they be planned or unplanned. We've already seen shows like Battlestar Galactica wrap up for the year, wrap up their series run, and other shows have wrapped up their season runs and are hoping to be renewed, such as Chuck and Terminator: The Sarah Connor Chronicles. Michael Asiello over at Entertainment Weekly, who runs their blog,
Asiello Files,
all things television, and is a prolific Twitterer. Has a cheat sheet that he updates on a regular basis on what's going to be renewed and what's not. And so I wanted to take a quick look and run down the list and see exactly what we can expect and what we can't expect. And some of this stuff is going to be redundant. We've talked about it before. And other things are going to be a bit of a surprise. So let's first take a look at the ABC lineup. And there's going to be some programs for all three or four or five of these networks, I should say. Geez, I'm sounding old when I say three networks. That are going to be automatically assumed to be renewed. Such as, for example, The Bachelor. Unfortunately, it's not for us. It's not our market, but it's very popular for ABC, and it's going to be renewed. A show like, for example, Better Off Ted could go either way. Brothers and Sisters already renewed. Cupid, which was the reboot of an older show, from the 90s, it's already canceled. Dancing with the Stars, of course, already renewed. Desperate Housewives, the same thing. Dirty Sexy Money, officially canceled. Eli Stone, officially canceled. Of course, Grey's Anatomy, the biggest show on NBC by far, already renewed. There's a show called In the Motherhood, canceled. Lost, actually Lost might be their biggest show, already renewed. Private Practice, renewed. Pushing Daisies, hasn't been on in a long time, and unfortunately is officially canceled. Samantha Who with Christina Applegate could actually go either way. We're still waiting. Scrubs, which was a defect, or I shouldn't say defect, but defected over from NBC. The prospects for that one are brightening, even though it was popularly assumed that it was going to end this year. Super Nanny renewed. Surviving Suburbia is a long shot. Ugly Betty renewed. The Unusual is a long shot. Wife Swap already renewed. Over at CBS, The Amazing Race, of course, already renewed. Big Bang Theory, one of the you know, great comedies of any of the networks, one of the newer ones, already renewed. Cold Case could go either way. Criminal Minds is a sure thing. All the CSIs are a sure thing. The 11th Hour is a long shot. Hearing the Crew is going to look for other work, which is an update that he's added here. The Canadian-produced Flashpoint is a long shot. It's going to continue, could continue airing in Canada, but we don't even know for sure. Good show, if you've seen it. Gary and Mary could go either way. Ghost Whisperer, of course, is a sure thing. This new serialized murder mystery, Harper's Island, already canceled. So don't even bother watching.
No. Harper's Island was only going to be 13 episodes. That was its original plan.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
But are they even going to bother airing all 13, do you think?
I don't know, but... But no, the plan was, that's one of the things that was being talked about a little while, a few months back I was reading, was should serialized TV, such as Lost and Battlestar, did set end dates. And that was planned with Harper's Island.
Okay.
We were just here and we're gone.
Well, and the reason why I mention it is...
But I don't know if they're going to do all
there are other shows like The Chopping Block in NBC, which is kind of a spinoff of Hell's Kitchen. That has a finite run. I think it's already done. I think they only aired 3 episodes. It's already done. And I don't think they're going to burn off the rest of the episodes, as they say.
Yeah.
Let's see. How I Met Your Mother, of course, a sure thing. The biggest comedy on CBS. The Mentalist, also a sure thing. NCIS, so popular it's getting a spinoff. The New Adventures of Old Christine with Julia Louis-Dreyfus could go either way. ABC's poised to pick it up if CBS decides to cancel it. Numbers is a sure bet. Rules of Engagement, absolutely. Survivor, are you kidding me? 2.5 Men, definitely.
Already renewed for 3 more years.
Yeah, The Unit was originally a long shot, and now it's a goner. Too bad there for Dennis Haysbert and The Unit. Without a Trace could go either way. Good show. It's too bad. Worst Week is also a long shot. Over at Fox, 24. Well, that's already renewed. We've already heard about the show moving to New York City. American Dad renewed. American Idol renewed. Bones renewed. Yeah, Dollhouse could go either way, now hearing that it's a long shot, unfortunately. That's the Joss Whedon show. Family Guy, already renewed. Fringe is a sure thing, which I was a bit surprised at. I'll have to maybe watch that on DVD now. I caught the first couple of episodes. It kind of didn't do it for me. It seemed like a mashup of a bunch of different shows that it's already been done before, but people seem to be liking it. House, of course, definitely renewed. King of the Hill, officially canceled. Kitchen Nightmares, already renewed. This is the American version of the Gordon Ramsay show from the BBC in the UK. Sorry, I should correct myself. It probably was not BBC. I believe it's Food Network. Lie to Me, a sure thing. Great show, actually. Prison Break, we already know, officially canceled. I shouldn't say canceled, maybe just finishing its run. I think that might have been planned. The Simpsons, already renewed. Sit Down, Shut Up, the new animated cartoon on Sunday nights, it's already canceled. Terminator, Sarah Connor Chronicles. They say it's a long shot. I'm going to chime in and say I think it's more than a long shot. He's basing his information on the fact that they've torn down the existing sets. And if you watch the season finale, they tore down the existing sets because they're no longer going to be set exactly where the show is. In fact, they've time traveled to a different place in time on Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Till Death, already renewed. For the Fox Network. Moving on to NBC, 30 Rock, of course, renewed. Biggest Loser, Celebrity Apprentice, both renewed. Chuck could go either way. The decision may not be made in time for NBC's May 4th Upfront, which is taking place tomorrow. There's a big fan upswelling and campaign to renew Chuck. Friday Night Lights, of course, renewed. Heroes, a sure thing. Kath and Kim is a goner. Kings, unfortunately, a favorite of Aaron's, is a goner.
I haven't seen it the last 2 weeks.
They're not even going to air the show.
They're not even airing it.
That's too bad. Knight Rider, definitely a goner, and good riddance, unfortunately. Law & Order is a safe bet, but I hear they're already working on next season's episodes, so there you go. Law & Order, Criminal Intent could go either way, but SVU is already renewed. Life, is we're now hearing that that one is canceled. Lipstick Jungle also canceled. Medium's a safe bet. My Name is Earl. My Name is Earl could go either way. Fox might rescue it if NBC passes on it. The Office, of course, already renewed. Parks and Recreation's a safe bet. And Southland, we hear, is officially renewed. Brand new cutting edge news. You hear it first. Maybe not first, but officially renewed for 13 episodes. Over at the CW, 90210's renewed. America's Next Top Model renewed. Everybody Hates Chris is canceled. The Chris Rock sitcom. That's too bad for that. Really great show, but I think people kind of took it for granted. The Game, it's a long shot. Gossip Girl's renewed. In fact, they're getting a spinoff. One Tree Hill's renewed. Privileged. Prospects are brightening for Privileged. Reaper's canceled. A funny show, just couldn't find an audience. Smallville's renewed, which is good, but a bit surprising because I hear Tom Welling wants out. Supernatural is already renewed as well. A great ratings get for the CW. So that's what we have right now for what's on and what's not as far as TV series are concerned in the U.S.
Yeah, and as the network upfronts happen at the end of the month, we'll have more knowledge. We won't do a whole long list, but we'll mention they'll announce the new shows as well.
I'm sure we'll talk about NBC's upfront next week.
Most likely. Mm-hmm. My fingers are crossed for Chuck. Unfortunately, it's the second season. I was watching it avidly until its fall finale, and then I didn't know when it came back, and it was thrown right to a different day, and
me
then
too.
It was put back on Mondays, and I just, by the time I found out when it was on, I just I was out of the loop and couldn't keep up.
Yeah.
Same thing with Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles. I did not have a problem with where they were going, but I just had too many shows going.
Terminator got really good.
Somebody get me a PVR.
Terminator got really good the last four, five, six even episodes. And Chuck, I think it was airing opposite something else that I was watching, and I think Chuck lost out. I think it was airing even against Terminator here in Canada.
They had the same hour.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was one of my problems. So I dropped Terminator for Chuck because I had enough drama on the day. Anyways.
And that's too bad, unfortunately, yeah. All right, so that should wrap things up for us, I guess, eh? For show 58.
Show 58 is in the can. Thanks for listening to us. We'll be back for show 59 next week. We will have more summer silly nonsense, and NBC's up front, and anything else that comes our way. So if you have any questions, complaints, comments, you can email us at moviesandtvcast@gmail.com. Check out the blog at moviesandtvcast.blogspot.com. Follow us on Twitter. Hi to everybody who is already. We're under Movies and TV Cast on Twitter. You can follow our updates on the blog. So thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Dennis. And again, thank you all. And we'll see you next time. Let the credits roll. Don't let the credits roll.